Different back then, I'll tell you. Yes, sir, boy, they were classy.
Yeah.
Men came to work, ties and hats, you know.
So yeah. Elegant.
Yeah. And you had tailor-made suits and a little place here for a little carnation in your lapel. And an inside monogram pocket, you know, for your opium pipe and your switchblade.
I'm sorry, what now?
Say, why don't you show me around the old studio?
TBTL!
I have a beta sequence I've been working on. Would you like to see it?
So I'm what's known as a psychic medium, but I'm also clairsentient, which means that I feel my angels. I'm also clairvoyant, which means I can see. I'm also clairaudient, which is most of the time I actually hear. I hear voices. And I also do financial advising.
I know those words, but that makes no sense.
That was a joke. Humor is the tool of the interesting.
Okay, T-Bone, time for some serious crunching.
All right, let's get this thing rolling, everybody. Hi there. Welcome to a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL. This is the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Carol, hold my calls.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Wanted to add a few comments regarding your mole situation.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center. Perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Sweet pod dog. Hey, Rue Dog, how are you? Pod Dog's here supervising everything. Watching the Bay Kitty stalk a butterfly in the backyard. It's like that Heart song, Dog and Butterfly, but it's about a cat and a butterfly, and the butterfly's probably not going to live. It's weird when one really cute thing is murdering a different really cute thing. It's a whole adventure and thrilling drama playing out just beyond where I'm sitting here recording episode 2,753 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We got a fun show for you on this Monday. Excited to be back. I'm also excited that I got a jolt of energy right before I started talking. We're recording this at around 3 in the afternoon, and I don't know, I get logy. Maybe I need some 5-hour energy. Or as my sister once tried to invent, 6-hour energy. But I honestly put my hand on the keyboard and I felt, I don't know if you've ever been this tired, and for the record, I have no reason to feel this tired. Got plenty of sleep last night, but you put your hand down on the keyboard and you almost feel your... Is this crazy? Your appendages falling asleep? Like, you feel you're tired. You know you can't go to sleep. You're sitting at your desk. You put your hand on your computer, and your hand starts to feel like it's going to sleep because it's like every man for itself, and we're sleeping down here. Anyway, I've perked out of that, and I am so ready to bring you this show. I can't even tell you. And we're going to start with some exciting mathematical news, which is it may actually make financial sense to buy a Mega Millions ticket.
That cash could really get me out of a couple of jams.
It's like $1.6 billion. Maybe is it $2 billion? Basically, if you win, you'll be roughly Bill Gates. With our current tax brackets the way they are, for the robber barons and the plutocrats, this would be a great time to be a billionaire. You'd probably pay no taxes on it. So we'll tell you why the math is in your favor, believe it or not. There's also been a new Tetris world champ crowned. I was watching the footage of these two guys in Portland playing in the Tetris World Championship this weekend. It brought back the excitement of youth. The visual of those Tetris blocks dropping and fitting into the exact place they're supposed to go. Or if you're me as a kid, not fitting in. Nobody liked to jam a weird sideways 7L into the wrong slot like I did. I realize how pornographic what I just said sounded. That wasn't where I was trying to go with it. Anyway, we'll talk about what makes a good Tetris player in 2018. Turns out it's exactly what made a good Tetris player in 1998, because they're playing on the original system. So we'll do that, plus emails and VMLs. Oh, and because it's a Monday, we've got the TBTL no-point conversion. Seahawks had the weekend off, which left me at loose ends yesterday. I was talking to my brother-in-law, Josh, in Portland. We were watching Sunday Night Football, and I was like, when the Seahawks don't play on a Sunday, I don't know what I'm supposed to look at. And he goes, yeah, but also isn't it a relief when the season's over and you can get your Sundays back? And that is also true. Life is full of weird contradictions, people. I didn't know if you knew that. Anyway, the Browns did have a game.
Go Browns.
I'm pausing because I'm trying to think of the most delicate way to put this. It was Browns-esque for this season. I had high points, low points, and ultimately ended in a low point. So we'll talk about that with my good friend Andrew Walsh. Speaking of which, this guy, longest-running Cobrogan of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, he has been a Republican in times good and times bad. He's back at it again with the white Vans. His voice is like a combination of Fergie and Jesus. He's Andrew.
That's a tuna, bro!
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Did you also get a jolt of adrenaline right as the show was beginning like I did?
I thought I did. It turns out it was just a jolt of electricity. I have some wires here that are not grounded, apparently.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. How are you feeling over there?
I'm feeling great. I'm really happy that I'm feeling great because I didn't want to put this on you. I didn't want to burden you. But I swear to God, like, when we were talking before the show, we were queuing a few things up. I was, like, just staring out the window, thinking to myself, I'm so tired right now that I might have a narcoleptic fit in the middle of the show. And then what I started doing was this thing. I know you're not a big napper, right?
I nap a little bit more these days, but I'm not a good quick napper, which is what I think you're going to describe. When I nap, even if I think it's going to be a quick one, it ends up being way too long, and then it takes me a long time to pull out of it. I need at least probably half the nap time back just to not feel...
You need a buffer nap to recover from your nap.
Exactly. I mean, how do you pull out of a nap so quickly?
One, I think that my stress response is to go to sleep, which is, I don't know how I'm, like, my people are still here. I feel like those would be the first ones dead. Like, the cavemen. You had the cavemen whose stress response was to flee. You had the cavemen whose flight response was to fight. And then you had the... Over there, a few of them that were just their impulse was to nap.
Right.
I feel like they would be the first ones eaten.
Well, I mean, I'm not trying to get real here, but you may be nearing the end of your line. I mean, how is Addie? what is her stress response?
She's great.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it skips a generation. Not napping as well. But what I mean is, you think that the lineage is dying out. That's very possible. I just thought you meant it's time for me to wander off into the fields and die. Addie can take over. And I'm saying she's well positioned. She's working at X-Ray Radio down there in Portland. I mean, she's ready to take over the family biz anytime.
Has she done her spirit quest yet, though? You have to do a spirit quest first, I think, right?
My spirit quest was having a baby when I was a teenager. I told you I was talking to that therapist, internet therapist, the other day, who, by the way, I went ahead and actually dumped.
Did you?
After we talked about it, and not because of your being upset on my part, but because as I thought about it over the weekend, I was like, I should have gotten a heads up that part of this therapy was going to be self-applied whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Acupressure?
Acupressure. And I don't mean I think the person was a bad therapist, but I just thought, like, I spent more of this therapy session worrying about if I was doing the acupressure right and then talking to you about it than I needed to. I need to get with a therapist where most of what I'm doing is getting therapy that I feel confident mm-hmm. about.
Can I I'm maybe doing something that I shouldn't do here because I don't know if this is the company that you used or not. And if it is, maybe just don't say anything or blink twice or whatever. But we got a tweet. Maybe you saw it from a listener who is recommending another online
It's not
therapy.
That company.
Yeah.
And it's not the water and it's not that company. That's Talkspace, which is apparently a big going concern. I know that they sponsor Nora's show.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like a competitor. This is the Pepsi to that Coke or Coke to that Pepsi.
Well, this
and I don't.
This comes. It says that they have. You know that you can. This listener says. You know, there's. It's really clear, straightforward. You can choose. It's like what kind of treatment you want and everything. So maybe give that a shot because it sounds like a neat idea.
Yeah. No. I'll tell you what. Even though my first foray into it wasn't super exactly what I was looking for, the benefits of it were still very noticeable to me today because I was supposed to have a therapy session at 11. And I got in, my flight from Portland got me back to Bellingham really late last night, so like 1 in the morning. And so I got to bed kind of late, and I was just a little groggy this morning, moving slow, and I didn't feel like logging on and getting my therapy at 11. Now, if that was an appointment I had with an IRL person, first of all, I'm going to have to pay for the session at this point. I'm in the window. And second of all, I just would like have to drag my butt down there and sit there and stare at someone whether or not I wanted to. In this case, I was able to just go I canceled the appointment like 40 minutes before, which was as good a reason as any to be online therapy, so you can cancel that.
So you can cancel your therapy without being charged.
Do you understand how much lower my stress levels are now that I know I can cancel any therapy appointment I want? You notice I just said theremin appointment, which is another thing I'm doing online.
Online theremin.
Theremin lessons. Woo!
Combine those. There might be something
that
there.
That would be so great. Anyway, just the flexibility of it. And so then I just went in and I was like, choose a new therapist. And they gave me a new list of people. And I poked around and I found someone and I looked at this woman, you know, honestly, who I dealt with the other day, she may have had it somewhere high up in her list of things she does, this NET therapy. Most of them do like 25 kinds of approaches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trained in, you know, addiction recovery and talk therapy and whatever, you know, you name it. She may have listed it and I didn't even notice it or whatever. But that's what I'm liking about this. It's just like the stakes are so much lower. It's like online dating for your emotions.
For your brain. Online dating
like
for
online
your brain.
Dating.
So you dumped that therapist. I thought, I'm sorry, I thought that you had dumped the whole service. So I was saying maybe you should try this other one. But you're financially invested in this service now, so you're going to get your money's
worth. I am. They
got
$240 bucks of my money this month.
Okay.
Now, if it doesn't work by the end of the month, I would consider switching or just going back to in-person therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm loving the flexibility to totally ghost on these people. I'm just loving it.
I mean, it's the most inexpensive way to skip your therapy. So
that's,
I mean,
right.
That's what they even say. Does it say it on their website?
No, but it really is a little bit like, it's why I would be a terrible online dater, I think. And why I think, I'm not saying anything bad about online dating because, you know, lots of people I know personally have met their partners through online dating. I think I would do poorly with it because of, I've described it before as a vending machine of humans. I don't know if I coined that or if that's out there, but it's that, it's the infiniteness of it. It's the fact that, like, you just can, like, oh, I don't really like, I'm not hitting it off with every element of this person. There's something behind them. There's something in a different part of the machine. Like, it just feels endless. Whereas in my day, the dating was more centered around, you meet someone, and then because it's a real life experience, and because there didn't feel like there was an endless supply of this person, you sort of try to figure out a way to make it work. I'm not saying that is necessarily the best approach. What I'm saying is with this online therapy thing and the fact that I can just like switch therapists with the click of a button,
mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying it, but it's also really de-incentivizing me to bond with any of the therapists.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't have hard numbers on this, but certainly every couple that I know who has been together for less than 5 years has met via online dating. So
I know, right?
I feel like it's not – I doubt it's even 50-50 anymore. It must be the vast majority of new couples, the vast majority.
It makes logical sense.
Right. So I wonder
– I mean,
yeah. I mean, could we see the same thing with things like therapy in the future?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, why are any of us in the same room with a therapist in this day and age? It really doesn't make sense considering how similar the experience is of looking at someone's face on a video screen. And I mean, I have to say, with talking to the therapist I talked to, I didn't feel any other than the fact that I had to do the acupressure on myself. I didn't feel any drop off in terms of the service I was getting if I'm sitting across the room from someone or if I'm sitting across the screen from someone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things that only makes sense over time. And by the way, I feel like most people probably, or a lot of people do find it online dating because they're not built like me. I am a self-described super maximizer, I'm a self-described super possessor. So my problem with online dating would be I would date someone, but then I would be constantly looking and thinking, is there some slightly better version of this person? Because I can't turn off that part of my brain that keeps trying to like level up,
mm-hmm.
whether it's where I live or, so I don't need to apply that to the person I'm with. For me, but I'm just talking about myself. I'm saying like other people are probably not as messed up as I am. And so they are able to meet someone online, go on a date and have a good time.
Can I tell you a story? I was thinking about you this weekend and I was actually even thinking how I don't want to tell you this because I feel like it can just be kind of like not fodder. Yeah, I feel like it could be fodder in the future for the next time you and I are like bickering about when I need to get to the airport for a work trip or something. But
I promise I will not use this. I will not use this as a weapon against you. In the future. I have to say that to Carrie sometimes. Let's just say, so be like, I don't want to tell you this because I know it's going to happen. Right now you're being cool about it, but when we're in an argument and I have to make a solemn promise, I will not bring that up. So I'm making a solemn promise. I will not use this as ammo to point out my rightness about airport arrival time.
I'm sure it's me and Carrie, though. It's not you. I'm sure the personality.
Okay, now I'm taking back my promise.
Now I'm bludgeoning.
Why are you getting up on me?
I don't know. Gary. Okay, here's what I was going to say, and I was hanging out with Genevieve as part of this too, and she's much more like you. This goes back to our conversation about time optimists and time realists. We were talking about this the other week. This article and this research was saying that a time optimist is somebody like you who thinks that the clock is kind of always in your favor, and you're doing math that is a little bit generous, and so you're putting too many things on your plate, which can often make you late for things and stuff like that. I thought, you know, you would think the opposite of that would be a time pessimist, which is not the term they use. They use a time realist to describe somebody like me who's kind of like, well, no, we should get there early. There could be traffic. You should build in some extra time. But they don't use the word time pessimist. Maybe time realist is in the middle, and if you take it too far, you're a time pessimist, because I think I did that to myself this weekend. We'll talk about, obviously, the football game in new point conversion at the end of this show. But I will say that this was one of those weekends where I only had one football game to watch. It was the Browns game, no Seahawks game, as you mentioned. And as you know, I've been kind of struggling to balance my love of Sunday football with my volunteerism with this, pop-up kitchen thing that I volunteer with often on Sundays. And this Sunday, yesterday, I knew that they needed somebody to like kind of do the setup work, to pick up a bunch of tables and chairs. It's my usual responsibility with them, and set it up at the place where we will then, you know, serve food to people in need underneath the I-5 bridge here in my neighborhood. And so I looked at the schedule in advance. I knew that nobody was going to be able to pick up the tables and chairs. I'm like, there's only one game. It starts at 10 a.m. I need to have those tables and chairs set up by 2:30 under the bridge. So I'm like, I think I can bet on the fact, as long as this football game does not go overtime, then I can totally handle this. But if the game goes into overtime, I'm going to be a little stressed for time, and I may not be able to see the end of the game. And Genevieve and I watched part of the game here at home, and then we went to the Browns bar because we were hungry, also in our neighborhood. And we're watching the Browns game, and of course, it goes into overtime. And it goes into overtime right around 10 after 1 in the afternoon, right? And I had told myself and Genevieve, I need to leave here at 1:30, no later than 1:30, to go back home, get the car, go pick up the tables and chairs, and then make it to under the bridge. I know I'm putting a little bit of buffer in there, but I just want to make sure that I'm not late, because it seems like a pretty
big deal. How
much
buffer? A half hour if you leave at 1:30?
Well, see, here's the deal. When I was doing this during the summer, it was baseball season. I didn't have to, like, I like listening to baseball on the radio. And it's available to me. It's not an out-of-city game. So I liked getting there kind of early, so I didn't have to rush. And then I would sit in the car and listen to some Mariners baseball until it was time to start unloading and setting up. I don't know exactly how early I was getting there, but I was like, if I leave 1:30, it'll probably put me there about on time. It's not giving me tons of buffer time, but enough time that I don't have to rush. And sometimes you do get this Sunday traffic, even though it's not far away from where I pick up the tables. So here I am. I'm at the Browns bar with Genevieve and some new people we just met who were sharing their table with us because we needed a seat. They were great. The Browns game goes into overtime, and it's a real nail biter. And I'm waiting, and the clock goes to 1:30 here in local time, and I'm like, I'll push it. And then it goes to 1:40. The game is still going on. They're setting up. At this point, they're kind of getting close to setting up for a field goal that may or may not actually decide the game. I dial up the game on my phone via Reddit. I pull up an illegal stream of the game on my phone. I show it to him. I'm like, I got the game on my phone, guys. I got to go to work. And so I leave, and I'm walking down the sidewalk trying to watch the final minutes of this game that's going to be decided by a field goal. I'm trying to watch it on my phone while I'm rushing to the car. I'm in the car just listening to the audio on my phone when we eventually do lose that game in overtime. I do all of this crap. I get the tables and the chairs, and as you would guess, I ended up there a half an hour early. I was there or at least 25 minutes early. And then I just had 25 minutes to sit in the car, mad at myself that I gave myself too much buffer time because I didn't want to be late, and miserable about the Browns loss. And I was thinking, you know what? The Genevieve and Luke would have pushed this to the limit, and they would have made it in plenty of time. And I had to go through all this rigmarole only to go and wait in my car with a bunch of tables and chairs for 25 minutes.
Yeah, but I would say that was the one bad outcome for you that's happened. I mean, I'm not saying there's never a downside to being early, but it's mostly good outcomes. And I've missed many a thing by pushing it, and those are all bad outcomes. Like, this, usually this works out for you. Now, I guess I'm imagining that you were supposed to, does that start at 2:30?
We start serving food exactly at 3, and so I get there at 2:30 with the tables. But I meet there at 2:30 who are there, like, I don't want to be in a situation where I am showing up at the tables and chairs and a bunch of people are waiting on me to get there, you know, and that would
that
be
totally
highly
makes
embarrassing.
Sense. That totally makes sense. And I'm honestly, I'm seeing the wisdom of your ways on this a lot now. Like, I had this happen the other day. I can't remember where I was. But I was just, well, for one, I was in Minnesota with you and Carrie when you both almost missed your flight.
Ugh.
My flight wasn't for like 3 more hours, which it seems like hell, but I don't know. I just sat in the airport. I was pretty chill, and it was nice to not be rushing. I'm coming around to you on this, but I will say that an hour for you to walk, this is just getting into Seattle geography, an hour for you to walk from the Westie to your house, get the car, go get the tables and chairs. Where do those reside? Or the tables, rather.
This is just, again, getting into some inside baseball, but they are on a street. They're on, like, they're near 25th Street. So you take 65th to 25th.
You.
No, but
so in other
sometimes
words,
traffic gets really wonky in taking a left off of, like, bringing them back.
I think an hour of buffer time, because you start setting up at 2:30. That was excessive. You know that now, so next time. But I still think living your life your way is better than living my life my way in this one regard.
Also,
every other way I live my life is better.
The only,
in this,
you know,
one regard.
I guess now that I'm just thinking, I didn't really think about the story before I started telling it, which listeners are probably hip to at this point. But I guess really that would have been much worse if they had won the game. Because honestly, the loss, I was miserable anyway. So what? So I missed them lose a game in overtime again through a miraculous kick by the other team. And I didn't get to see it in full
depth. Don't forget a miraculous fumble.
I did see that. But if they had come back and won that and I wasn't around all of the happy Browns people at the bar, and you know, I left. Genevieve was funny. Genevieve, again, a Browns fan only via me. If I die tomorrow, I don't think she knows the score of any Browns game. But we go to the Browns bar, and then she just said the nicest thing. She has gone with me before, like once or twice, to pick up the tables, so she kind of knows where they are. And she says, hey, listen, if this is going to go to the end, just let me take care of the tables and chairs. I'll go get the car, and I'll do it. And I'm like,
That's really sweet.
I'm like, I'm not gonna let you do that. And also, like, I just know where it is, and, you know, they're heavy and stuff. Like, it just – and anyway – and then I said, but, you know, if you want to go with me, that'd be cool. She's like, oh, no. I mean, somebody should be here to see this. So she was willing to take a full bullet for me, but she wasn't like, we're not going to both take bullets on this shit.
Well, yeah, exactly. She's like, if one of us has to die, fine, but right. I'm not going to, like, take half a bullet over here and just be mortally wounded.
Right. So.
Yeah. No, you're lucky the Browns lost. The Browns lost that game in your honor and out of consideration for you, because – To just be sitting in a, like, same thing. No, by the way, the worst outcome would have been you wait, you watch the entirety of the game, they lose the game, and you're late to set up your stuff. That's everything bad. Like, when you and I were, we were going to Minnesota, and we were at the Eagles with everybody, and I was debating, because, you know, I was like, maybe we can leave 5 minutes before the flight. And you were like, I'd like to leave much earlier than that. And it ended up being a thing where they lost, but we watched at the end at the airport, and it was a bummer, but I was at that point glad we were at least at the airport.
Right. A funny sidebar to that, at least that I found funny that I keep thinking about, is you and I are kind of listening to the game in the car as we're heading to the airport, and it's a rental car. And so then you return it and you tell me, like, get your Cairo radio app ready on your phone so that you can continue listening to the game when we hop out of this car. And I don't have the Cairo radio app, and none of my other streaming apps would let me listen to the game because they were all blocking it for rights reasons. And you're like, just take my earbud. Like, you have those earbuds, you know, of course, the wireless Apple.
I gave you my left earbud.
I'd give my left earbud to listen to this game. And so you give me that. And so that was very nice of you. And I'm listening. I flick all the wax off it and I stick it in my ear. And I got the left one. You got the right one. There's no wires.
I felt very close
is,
to you when this was happening. We're sitting on the shuttle. Yeah. I'm listening on right seas. You're listening on left seas.
And what I don't know is how these things work. And every now and then, like, we're even hustling to the shuttle. And, you know, at one point it's like a commercial break. And so I don't want to, like, lose your earbud. So I kind of take it out of my ear. And then I don't really kind of know what's going on. And then finally, I've done that like three or four, maybe even five times. And then finally on the shuttle, you say, could you stop taking it out of your ear? Every time you take it out of your ear, it pauses the game.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that just by taking it out of my ear, this thing was actually...
Yeah.
And so every time it paused the game, it then... It didn't, like, stop it. You weren't missing time. It just put us further and further behind real time.
Yeah. Yeah. That was... I mean, honestly, it sucked that they lost, but that was a fun... That was, like, a fun, weirdly fun adventure of, like, we're listening on the shuttle bus.
Mm-hmm.
We're listening on the same headphones, but no one knows because they're not connected. And then, like, something would happen, and I would, like, lock eyes with you, and we both do, like, a tight fist of, like, yes.
But then you were also saying, like, don't listen to those people over there. They're ahead of us in their stream. There's somebody else
on
the
shuttle. I'm such a maniac. No, here's the thing. We were behind, and I was worried that other people... Because I could hear people... muttering about the game on the bus, and one guy, I got the sense that he was like looking at an app, or that he was totally caught up. And the reason that we were behind, but we couldn't fix it because this is so boring. But we were listening on satellite radio. That was the only modality that we could get it on our phone. I am a subscriber to Sirius, and because of the vagaries of satellite technology, somehow routing that thing through the Sirius satellite and back down to Earth, we were 2.5 minutes behind, and we had no control. There was no skipping to live programming for us. So there's a guy, and because I don't have my left earbud in, this is so dumb, my left ear is exposed to the sounds
just
of the shuttle bus.
Just out there, yeah.
Just out there, just raw-dogging through the world on a shuttle bus. And I hear people start talking about the game, and I'm like, I know one of these dinguses is like looking at the update on their phone, and they're about to say something, and I can't unhear it. So I fold my ear over. I literally fold my left ear over on itself to shut out the world and to not hear the score.
And again, it was all for a loss.
Yeah, right? So anyway, I will not use the fact that you were at your thing a half hour early against you. Because I'm actually coming around to your side of things, believe it or not.
If nothing else, it really is a less stressful way to live your life. Even though it seems like I'm a more stressful person, I will say that, yeah, I'm glad. I guess, you know, so I sat in the car kind of miserable listening to a, you know, post-game show and being just mad at the Browns and mad at the world and also thinking I'm a dingus about it. But you're right. If it was different, I was rushing up at the last minute and I'm like sweating. I'm like, here are the tables, everybody. I like football. I guess I would have felt like a piece of crap.
That'd have been a weird way to explain the table.
Yeah. Well,
I like football.
I like turtles.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I'm coming around to your side on this. I'm not saying I'm doing it, but I'm starting to kind of, I don't know.
I like turtles.
I don't, what I'm realizing is you just trade one stress for a different kind of stress in your life.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's, and I think that the stress, I think I'm starting to the transition into trading. I'm changing. I'm starting a lot of transitions. Still trying to keep on my vegetarian grind a little bit, and I'm also just figuring like, I don't know. I think that I think that not being stressed all the time about I'm going to miss a flight or something, or I'm going to be late for the movie or whatever. I'm starting to see that as actually a benefit in my life. Meanwhile, online therapy, I like to break up with them 1 minute before the session. That's
right.
Just how I do.
Well,
all right. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we will talk about the Mega Millions. The Tetris World Champion, and an even more in-depth conversation about the Cleveland Browns. So you wait for it. It's all coming up on TBTL.
In the early morning rain, with a dollar in my head, with an aching in my heart, in my pockets full of sand. I'm a long way from home. Lord, I miss my loved ones so.
Is this, who is this? Richard Buckner? No.
Gordon Lightfoot.
Ah.
Our efforts to make this show 100% Gordon Lightfoot material moves forward. This song is called Early Morning Rain. I was just looking for a song that has something to do with being early. Didn't exactly nail it with this
one. I like
one,
it, though. But, you know what? Since you got me into that...
Carefree Highway?
Carefree Highway. Oh, it's really that. Kind of... The name Gordon Lightfoot was so weird to me as a kid, and then the fact that his big song is the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
I would like Carefree Highway caused me to reimagine or rethink of Gordon Lightfoot. So
yeah, me too. I love that song, and there's another one that I'm blanking on right now that I absolutely love that I heard in that same on the jukebox in that same bar where I put on Tom Waits. The day I heard Tom Waits actually was also, or the day I played that unfortunate Tom Waits song was the same day that I really got into Gordon Lightfoot. Although I will say this, and I will pray that our friend Bean never hears this. The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald is just, I mean, I know it's what he's most famous for, but I can't do that song.
It's just too boring or too long?
It's just too boring and long. I mean, they're kind of part of the same deal.
Lynn, please pull that audio. Let's play that on the show all the time. Bean is quite a character. He, like, his favorite food is candy corn. His favorite singer is Gordon Lightfoot. And he's the person he most wished he could have met was Clyde Tombaugh, the guy who identified Pluto as a planet.
Right.
Dude has got some weird instincts.
Right, yeah. Oh, by the way,
but I love him.
If You Could Read My Mind is the Gordon Lightfoot song that I heard in that bar that I was like, what am I missing out on when it comes to Gord's gold?
Is that a thing they say, or did you just come up with that?
That's like his greatest hits record. I'm looking at it in front of me.
You know what? Maybe that song by Gordon Lightfoot, which I'm going to play from right here, presumably after some sort of commercial plays, maybe we'll use that for the Donors of the Day.
Ooh, I like it. You're going to play If You Could Read My Mind? Like, if you could read my mind, then you would know that you care enough about TBTL to support it?
Exactly. If you could read my mind, you would know that I love these people so much, these Donors of the Day.
If you could read my mind.
Gordon Lightfoot, handsome devil in his day.
You really? Let me take a look here.
Wouldn't have known it.
Are you listening? Are you watching him perform this? Is this a live?
No, it's just an album cover from a record that apparently has this song on it. Hey, the Donors of the Day today. These are people who donated during the TBTL-a-thon. We really do appreciate them.
Oh, good looking. Chris Pratt-esque at times.
Yeah, and he doesn't tweet about Mariner games or about Seahawks games like my mom does. So that's a differentiator between him and Chris Pratt.
Right.
Did I tell you about that?
Right, yeah.
He does look like Chris Pratt. Holy shnikes. The If You Could Read My Mind, like, single cover.
I think that's the same exactly one we're looking like at. He's wearing like a white undershirt, sort of.
No, I'm looking at a different one. But anyway. These Donors of the Day's Donors of the Day donated to TBTL during the TBTL-a-thon. Most of them are making recurring donations. It's what allows us to do this thing. Mickey Pressman of Elkins Park, Pennsylvania. Bill Sonnenberg of San Francisco, California. Aaron Spencer of Louisville, Kentucky. Amy Walensky.
What the shit?
What the damn shit?
I was embarrassed that I swore. Thank you for swearing twice to me.
No, there's a lady that used to come into the slow pitch named Sunny, and her saying was, what the damn shit, when she wouldn't win.
That's her catchphrase.
And we all say it. She moved out of town, but people now, in honor of her, will just say, what the damn shit? this is so crazy. I guess... A couple of the folks that work at the slow pitch sort of deduced that I do this for one of my jobs. And it's mortifying because I guess a couple people, this is this like combination restaurant, sports bar, poker room, casino in Bellingham that I love very dearly. One of the folks there said that their parents have started listening to the show because they live in Bellingham. Mm. And I apparently called the slow pitch the short stop.
Oh.
Apparently, this is not my first reference. Of the slow pitch on this show, which is not surprising. But I called it the shortstop, which I think I must have been confusing it with a bar in L.A. by Dodger Stadium that I used to love called the shortstop that's over there in Echo Park. But it was a weird thing to sit down at the table and have the dealer come up to me and go, yeah, my mom was listening to your podcast and you called the slow pitch the shortstop. And I was like, okay, new rule. Nobody from my real life can listen to this show.
Yes. And secondly, how do you know I wasn't talking about a different place called the shortstop?
I think I must have said some other identifying characteristics. But it's like Rich listens to the show now. My neighbor, who is definitely real.
Sure. I believe it. He sounds super real. Why don't they call it it's Slow Pitch Grill and Casino? They should call it a Grillcino. Like, that's what they do in Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. We're not in Cleveland.
In Cleveland, if anything is something and a casino, they just combine them.
Whether or not it's like a good pairing.
Right. Roxino.
Universities, hospital, and casino. The Hospcino.
Excuse me. Where's the little boycino?
Oh, great. Now we have to have transcinos. Thanks a lot, Obama. I know I've said this on the show before, but I was saying this to somebody IRL the other day. I mean, I don't want to sound glib or joking on this day of all days when the current administration of this country, the presidential administration, appears to be seeking to effectively eradicate the idea of a number of Americans who are people that are trans. I don't want to sound like I'm making a joke on this day of all days, but just an unintended benefit of the movement towards unisex bathrooms, in particular just like single-use, one-at-a-time bathrooms, has just been that I totally don't have to go home to poop anymore.
Yeah, just the privacy factor.
It's a long, long part of my life, you know, where I would like hold it all day or have to go home. And now it's like I just walk up to that bathroom that is a unisex bathroom. It's just like one person at a time. You close the door, you lock it, you do your thing. And that's an outgrowth of a lot of laws that have changed, that have been fought in places, which is just bananas. I'm like, what are you fighting against right now? These bathrooms are so great. Yeah. Like one of the main two improvements in my life, the internet and like a bathroom where I can just be in there by myself and lock the door. Thank you for many reasons, but thank you for that, trans Americans who have been fighting for your decent basic human rights.
The only thing about bathrooms like that, you know, whether they're unisex or not, is the worry that if you do have to do a number two, know why I'm talking like a child, and then you leave and there's like a long line of people waiting to get in, you know.
I've already practiced my speech. It was like that when I found it. And you can bond. This is where I'm trying to be a less shady person overall. Like I'm trying to not prevaricate or withhold information. This is a real thing. I'm not joking. I'm trying to just be like, there's been a couple of things that have happened of late where I was tempted to use a half-truth or leave out information or be slightly misleading because I thought it would just be easier for me. And then I ultimately was so relieved I didn't, because I would have been very much caught in that.
This isn't a private matter. This isn't on stage or anything.
No, this was one thing had to do with an event that was very important to somebody in our life, and I couldn't be there. And the reason I couldn't be there was something that sounded generally fun for me. And I was tempted to say, because nobody really knows what I'm doing for my job stuff from day to day. It really changes around. I was tempted to overstate the professional importance of the matter so that it would make more sense that I wasn't there. And I didn't. I just said what was really happening. And then what I found out later was that this person listens to the show.
Oh, interesting.
And I would have,
they
would have completely known my comings and goings, because this show just serves as a place where I basically recite what city I'm in, what I'm doing, what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And it would have really been hurtful to this person had I been caught in an exaggeration or something that wasn't obviously true.
Right, yeah.
And I was so relieved by that I was like, hey, maybe this is a good way to go through life. I know I'm getting the memo kind of late, but I'm trying to just be – it's too much of a hassle. Most of the people I know, like Carrie, who just don't believe in being untrue, they're just like, look, it's just too much of a hassle to try to keep your story straight. Just so much easier to just mean what you say and say what you do, and then you never have to be like, well, yes, technically I was doing that thing, but then after that is when I went to the Roxino. Or whatever, you know what I mean?
The Grillcino, I believe it's called.
It was a, it's just easier... It's easier to just be totally truthful with people, but the harder part is then you have to deal with them having their feelings about whatever it is you just told them. And that is where I have a problem, because I want to manage everybody's experience around me so that they think I'm awesome. Mm-hmm. And if I have to tell someone I can't come to this thing because I'm going to be somewhere, and maybe that's going to sound like I'm not taking their thing seriously, or maybe it's not going to sound – it sounds like I'm choosing this thing over that thing. I have to just be okay with them having their feelings on it. And that's what I'm trying to get better at, and that's helping me be much more truthful about things.
Yeah. I'm not somebody who really bends the truth all that much, although – the one place where I maybe choose my words very carefully, because I really don't want to lie or mislead, but when it comes to social engagements, sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just like not a very social person. I mean, I don't know. You know me. We hang out in social situations a lot. And I definitely love my friends, and I love that we have, a big loving group of friends. And I love that stuff. But sometimes it's just...
It drains you.
It just drains me in a way that it doesn't drain, I think, you and Genevieve and our other more kind of outgoing friends. And so I never want to be the kind of person who's like lying and saying, I don't feel good when I feel fine and I just don't want to go out.
But you just don't feel like coming.
Yeah, but I also don't want to be like, I can't make your party because I'm not into it and I want to stay home and like maybe literally watch reruns of a show I've seen a million times before, because that feels shitty to the person who's doing something special for you, you know? So I'm trying to just be honest about my feelings without hurting other people, because a little bit of social lubrication, not social lubrication meaning booze, but a little bit of like, there are things that we say as we navigate society, and especially like kind of the social aspects of society, where you don't want to be bluntly honest at all times, you know, from the classic, you know, how, you know, do you like my new dress, to do you want to come to my like holiday party? That's a good one. I don't like holiday parties, you know, or one person show. Yeah.
Well, this brings it all back to where I started with this, which is, even though I'm trying to be more truthful and just have less drama in my life, I will straight up lie to somebody if they're coming into that bathroom after me and I blew it up and be like, yeah,
right. That's where we were.
That
right.
was like it. That was where I, that was, it was like that when I got there.
Right.
And then we laugh and then we shared a moment and then they go in there and then they're not judging me and I'm not getting judged. I think everybody wins
but
in
how,
that scenario.
We hear, like, we got to finish thanking the donors of the day. And I actually,
but we're still in the middle of that.
I have something I need to tell the donors as well. Don't let me forget that, but let me, while we're getting real personal here about doing our business, when you're in a situation, let's say it's a restaurant or a bar or a barcino, and you need to excuse yourself, and again, like, actually, you know, use the restroom in a serious way, are you able to just do it so quickly that you can come out of that situation and lie and say it was the person in front of you? Because usually if I'm in that situation, and if there's a line waiting to get in, my assumption in that case is that I've been in there for a little bit.
You just got to work fast.
And you do that? Because I know that you're somebody who, when, you know, you tell stories about how at least at one point in your life or most of your life, you were a very shy pooper. And
yes.
So therefore, I'm surprised that you can just go in and zip it, zippity-doo-dah.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're just going to keep getting more descriptive with this, which will be less and less great for the listeners.
I hate myself so much right now.
You shouldn't. But let's just say for me, the issue has never been, can I go to the bathroom fast? The issue has been, am I embarrassed about it? Do I feel weird being in the stall at the Burger King where someone comes and sits in the stall next to me or what have you? But it's not that I can't deploy things in a quick fashion. In fact, sometimes, like when I crap my pants at a Mariners game, I deployed things in too quick of a fashion.
If anything, you need a governor on that or some sort of a braking system.
So,
that's interesting. So even when you talk about it being shy, it doesn't impact your performance. That surprises
me.
I
don't have a shy sphincter.
Oh, show title. Just kidding. Nobody write that down. Because
Lynn, write that down.
I feel like I might be, I don't know, maybe equally shy, maybe even less shy, but it does affect performance for me.
There's a psychological component.
Knowing that if there's somebody in the stall next to me, or knowing that there might be a line forming outside, that messes with me. Just like this conversation is messing with our listeners in a way that I am mortified about.
I think these people are excited that this has been woven into the fabric of their donor of the day. Thanks. Talking about Mickey Pressman of Elkins Park, PA. I know we mentioned her already, but I feel like it's been so long.
Yeah, I know.
We need to remind people who we're talking about. Bill Sonnenberg of San Francisco, California. Aaron Spencer of Louisville, Kentucky. Amy Walunski of Chicago. What if I had no short-term memory?
What? the shit.
Amy. Thanks, Aim. You know, this in the last 2 weeks, it has been revealed that the donors, this is insane. The donors to this show include, but are not limited to, Steve Riverboy Newman, who we used to work with, Steve Nelson, a.k.a. El Ropo, our former supervisor who hired us at American Public Media, and now Amy Walensky, who is our former master of coin at APM, among many things. I don't want to reduce her down to just that, but basically, like, just in charge of all things fundraising. And what is she doing with her hard-earned WBEZ money? Because that's where she now works. She's sending it to our show. I mean, that's an incredible buy-in from the people we work with. That's really sweet.
Yeah. Nah, we gotta send her a note, I think.
Now, how is it that none of the people we currently work with donate to the show? What's up with those SOBs?
I don't know. They're skimming off the top, actually. All right.
That's what's happening.
Speaking of the people who are skimming off the top, and of course I'm talking about our colleague Emily, who is our new master of coin, and who I don't trust.
Oh, geez.
I don't trust
Major
her further
skimmer.
Than I can throw her. No. She's awesome, and she and I have been communicating a lot because we know that there are still some folks who donated.
Wait, I have
in
one
June.
More name. Can I read the last
name?
Oh,
yes.
So that
I'm
we don't,
sorry. Oh,
I don't
shoot.
Forget, and then
yes.
just like...
Julia, I'm
that's
sorry.
Okay. I would never forget about Julia Allers of Issaquah, Washington. I could never forget about Julia. Julia, Amy, Aaron, Bill, and Mickey, thanks for donating to TBTL. Okay, now back to what you were saying.
And I'm sorry about that, Julia. Anyway, so there were still some folks. There was all this. It was just kind of bad timing. A bunch of things happened at once. And so a bunch of gifts took a long time to ship out. We are working with a new company that ships these things out. And so if you're still waiting on your hat or your T-shirt or anything else that you might be waiting on as a thank you gift from the TB Telethon in June, we apologize. It shouldn't take this long. But they're coming. The next batch, and it should be the final batch of gifts, is going out later this week. So certainly by, I would say, the first week of November, everybody should have their stuff, and we're keeping an eye on it. And, you know, if it does end up being, you know, the first or second week of November and you're curious about your stuff, email me at andrew@tbtl.net. I promise you, you are not bugging me. We'll take care of you. We appreciate the fact that you supported the show. So the least we can do is get you your thank you gift. So don't be shy about that, folks.
Absolutely. Like Andrew going number two with a long line at Starbucks. These things took longer than they should have, but they will get there, and they
and let's face
will
it,
be beautiful.
And some of them stink. But they are
I was going to say they'll be beautiful. I was trying to be poop positive.
I didn't do it.
Friend.
They were like it when I got here. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Slate writing today. I still call it Slate Magazine. That's how old I am, Andrew.
So do I.
God bless it. I'm ancient. Slate today writing that the math says you should buy a Mega Millions ticket. It's $1.6 billion now. The drawing is tomorrow night. And the math is pretty simple. Even though the chances are insanely low that you will win it, 1 in 302 million, since it went up by last week, it was 970 million. Now it's up to 1.6 billion. So as this pot gets bigger, the mathematical, the value, or I should say the, what would you call it? The math, I guess, that you should buy a ticket is only getting more positive in the direction of buying the ticket, because the ticket price is fixed. The jackpot prize is going ever northward. Mm. Now, you're not going to win, but the tickets are getting more. You're getting more and more bang for your potential buck as the jackpot grows. Is this enough to get you to go down to your local Quick Stop and pick up at least a Mega Millions ticket?
Maybe. I'm looking it up now. Like, where I, like, my family never got into, you know, playing the lotto at all. Genevieve, actually, my modern family, is actually very against the lotto as far as...
Really?
As far as its
impact. Do you think it's like a poverty tax?
Yeah, and that, you know, they, and, you know, where the money is supposed to go to education stuff is not actually...
That's probably true.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm not against it like she is, but it's just never on my radar until it's huge. Like right now, what is the Mega Millions? It's like, it's higher than it's ever been. It's like over
$1.6 billion.
Oh, you just said that. $1.6 billion. I didn't even know about this until I think over the weekend. Has this been a story that's been brewing in the local news for a long time now?
It's been getting bigger and bigger. And so like last week it was just shy of a billion. And so it was starting to, I think the last couple of weeks there have been stories about it.
Yeah. So anyway, it's always just kind of a blind spot for me. And also I'm always a little intimidated. How do you go about doing it? Mm-hmm. Literally, I don't know how to go about doing it, and I don't want to hold up the line at 7-Eleven.
I don't 100% either, but what I will do, I try to act like I'm... It's funny because I'm not plagued by this sort of anxiety that you have, that I'm going to, like, do it wrong, as it were. But I do remember the first time I bought one of these, because I don't play any of these games, typically, so I don't know the whole lingo, but I think I just went up and was like, I'll take one Mega Millions, please. And I think you can just have the computer pick your numbers, which I do.
Really? I'm surprised because you have numbers, right?
Yeah, but I mean, maybe I could go play my numbers.
Yeah.
I guess I should. You know, honestly, why the two or three times I've even done this in my life, why I've had the computer pick the numbers? Because I didn't want to be a hassle.
Right.
Because I don't know how many numbers there are. I don't know if I tell the person and they type them in. I don't know if I type them in. Like, so I just like, what is the lowest stress transaction I can do? But you're right. I should play my roulette numbers.
You really should, because I would not. I mean, I wouldn't be able to survive if your numbers ended up winning and you didn't buy the ticket.
That would be hilarious. I mean, it would be in a tragic way. I don't know, though, because we've talked on this show a lot about those various studies about if people are or aren't happy. Although, you know what the latest one is? Yeah, people are happier when they have a shitload of dough. Like, you've heard, there was famously a documentary, and I think that there's a lot of people tend to think that, or the conventional wisdom has been that if you win the lottery, you think you're happier because your money problems are sort of solved, but you end up ultimately less happy because when you don't have money problems, just other problems sort of, you know, they rush in to fill that void. But then at some point, somebody actually did a real like rigorous study, and they were like, no, sorry, people who won a shitload of money, more of them are happier than they used to be, than are sadder than they used to be.
Yeah,
people being sadder than they used to be was enough for this. Because it's so counterintuitive, it was enough for it to become something people talked about, and then it became what was thought of as like what was happening most of the time. But the simple fact is, most of the time for people, if they get $10 million dropped in their lap, it's the net effect is positive, not negative.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, and that's exactly what I would expect. Because, sure, I mean, if the study is assuming that, like, oh, you won the lottery, you'll never be sad again, it's a panacea for all of life's problems, well, obviously, that's bunk science, bro. But a huge part of stress for people is just the day-to-day. Yeah. You know, we're talking about it a little bit last week about, like, you get your car towed and you're already living on the fringes economically, and then what that means to you, and how you were mentioning, you know, how being poor is expensive and all these things. Like, it's the day-to-day stresses, financial stresses, that can really, really impact your life. Now, again, you'd win tons of money. It's not like all the problems are going to go away, but it's got to alleviate some of that just basic survival shit.
Yeah, this is the this is how they value these tickets. This is by way of Jordan Ellenberg, who's a math expert. okay, here's how you do it. You multiply the probability of getting a certain prize by the value of the prize itself, repeating for all potential prizes and then adding your result. So if we look at the jackpot for this one, $1.6 billion, and you multiply it by the small odds of winning, which are 1 in 302 million, you get an expectant value of $5.29. The tickets cost $2.
Hmm.
Can't afford not to.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of warged out of the math there a little bit, but I mean, I trust you.
The upshot is...
Go ahead.
it's just you're getting – I mean, you're not going to win. I'm not going to win. How crazy would it be if it came up 7, 14, 23, 35? I think I don't have enough roulette numbers to play this all in roulette numbers. Maybe I can just like – I can figure something out. But I was going to say, I'm not going to win. You're not going to win. No one we know is going to win. That's the math or that's the probability on this. But basically, they've just said that with it being this – with the expectant value of your ticket is $5 and 29 cents. That is a function of how ludicrously large the jackpot has gotten. So there are probably some weeks when it's – I don't know what it goes down to, but let's just say it's half of that, or let's say it's even less than that. Where does it start out at? Maybe, let's just say $100 million. The expectant value of that might be $1.50, in which case – it's a bad buy for your $2. But when the pot gets large enough, there's a higher expectant value because of how big the pot is. And so that – and even though that number is almost – those that statistics are kind of weird because in either case, you're not going to win it. So how can you say there's a value to it? But it's just based on the numbers. That $1 billion is so large that it gets divided by the odds of winning and it brings – it results in an expectant value. And that expectant value is currently very high.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a problem plunking down a few bucks for one of these tickets, but
you'll pull a tab.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's my economic model right there. Is I'm going to get rich by pulling tabs at local dive bars,
or Mancini's Char House,
or at the Char House. Our boy the Durs was
at the Char House.
Was at the Mancini's Char House yesterday.
What?
Yeah, he's in St. Paul. I think he's at our headquarters doing some kind of public radio training.
Wait a sec. And he texts you but not me about Mancini's Char House? That hurts.
He texted me last week and said, I'm going to be in St. Paul. Do you have any bar or restaurant recommendations? I responded
with
nothing.
I'm glad he didn't email me.
All I did was send him a picture of the Mancini sign that I took. And I left it at that. And then that was last week. And so yesterday he texted me and said, I love this place. And I said, I think he had dinner there. And then he was heading back to the bar. But he said that he didn't see any Mickey sightings. But I don't know. I don't know how well he
was. There a guy knocking on his head?
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably Mickey.
Exactly. He said it was a pretty dead night, but it seems like a fun place. I was like, the whole point of it is that it's a dead. I mean, I don't think I want to see Mancini's on a busy night.
Although it's terrifying when it's dead because you're like, this place is going to go out of business tomorrow.
I know.
Because it's so cavernous. You're like, this place seats between 200 and 900 people.
Yeah, I know.
But on the nights when you have just Andrew, Luke, and Mickey there, how are you making money?
I know. Well, I put
and then
some
the owner
money.
Is driving people home.
Yeah, right. Anyway, yeah. So Mancini's, check it out if you're in St. Paul.
Let's.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
With the no point still to come, I'm trying to keep us slightly on target
so
here.
So do you think we'll do the Tetris story tomorrow? Probably not, huh? Because we're going to be doing some kind of special
shows.
You want
to just talk about it quickly here?
All I want to do is tell you that I did have my... Hold on. Is this going to work? I had my my Tetris Game Boy here. I was going to play some...
Ooh.
Can you hear that?
Oh, my God. This takes me back.
Because we had a Tetris story. The story is less interesting than me playing on my Game Boy. Which music should we choose?
This is actually great.
Got that?
I liked that, that can you switch them?
Yep, that's one. Here's another.
I like the one that was from...
And then here's the third one.
This one I think is from... Really?
Well, these are my Game Boy options.
Oh, talk about the Mandela effect. I don't know if on the... I had it in my mind, and I'm sure I honestly just misremembered this, and then my brain started remembering it as what happened. I was under the impression, somehow, that one of the songs on Tetris was actually from the Nutcracker. Like, it was a... Because Tchaikovsky was a Russian composer. And I wondered... But that was, like, the video game, the home video game version.
Yeah.
But I could have been wrong about that, too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff swirled around in my head from that... You know, era of technology. I could have been thinking about some other game totally unrelated.
Yeah.
I thought that rings a bell to me, though. I thought there were like basically the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies was. I thought there was a version of the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies that played on Tetris. But again, I could be totally out of my mind. I think what was interesting about the Tetris story was honestly just watching the video of it. And the Kotaku has a good write up of this, even though Kotaku was part of the people that tried to take me down when I criticized Twitch. It's okay. I forgive you. I'm not Peter Thiel. I'm not going to sue you. Also, you didn't do anything illegal. I'm not going to sue you, Kotaku, and bring you down like he and Hulk Hogan did with Gawker. Okay. But That was uncool, dude. Anyway, Kotaku has a good write-up of this. It's just basically like this one dude has been like the best Tetris player in the world, and he just has like a normal job. He works at a bar or something, right?
He's a
and
brewer.
Nobody even knew he was this, he's a brewer. Nobody even knew he was this like – nobody from his normal life knew he was this like insane Tetris player. He comes out to Portland, and he matches up against this like 16-year-old kid who also lives, I think, in the greater Portland area, relatively new to Tetris. And he loses. He was actually very cool about it. The guy who'd been winning it for many years. He you know, there was a point at the end of their head-to-head match where he realizes he's going to lose. He just starts watching on the split screen the kid playing, and then he congratulates him.
Yeah, it's really
but
nice.
He's watching those screen of those shapes and figures dropping. It's so like it's such a strong memory from my youth.
Yeah,
like of watching Tetris. Mostly my sister Sarah, who is like. I think that watching these two like world champion level Tetris players play, my sister could have done that. She was seriously as fast as those guys. That's what I've been trying to describe to you for all these years about how good she was. Watching those guys play, that is the speed at which my sister Sarah can play Tetris.
Wow.
I know.
Should we just play, only because it's only a minute long.
Yeah, play by play?
Yeah, let's just play. So this is at the very, very end of the championship round right before or as the kid wins it.
He's made it to level 32. It's all up to this right now.
Jonas staying alive and making it to Tetris. This could mean the victory here. Boom, Tetris for Joseph. Three more.
The pressure is on the kid right now.
Crazy build going on.
Always going for the Tetris.
Boom, Tetris for Joseph. Can
he's
he do
one
it?
Away.
One
he's
and change.
One away.
One and change will do it. Yeah. Oh, and a long bar. Is it going to come? Where is it? Or is there going to be a drought? How is this going
to
play out?
I'm glad to hear that the official term for it is long bar, because that's what I've been calling it.
Oh, that is what you've been calling it. Yeah. I didn't know the
Wouldn't
term drought.
You think
drought?
They'd have some, like, I feel like there should be, like, more terms of art for these different shapes.
Yeah.
Like, if you're the official, like, if you're the Tetris announcer, I feel like you should have a more complicated and a more interesting terminology than what we called it at our house. Oh, long bar. We need a long bar.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I need a long bar so bad. Because, of course, you build up and up and up. And then those – and these Tetris players were as relieved getting one of those long bars as I was when I was a kid.
Yeah, and they're talking about it being a drought. So the you have long bars. I don't know if I called them long bars or not. But definitely then you have squares, T's, and L's, right? Like those are all the shapes. And – we all know that feeling of like I've built this
there's
up.
Weird,
I've
like,
built this up.
There's weird Z one too.
Oh yes,
kind of like two one stacked on top of each other, meet in the middle.
Yeah, those things are little bastards.
I know they don't fit in anything.
And apparently, what these guys do is they, or at least the guy who lost, the one who was the reigning champ, likes to really stack them up high and then get some of those long bars and then like to the point where it seems like he's not going to be able to get out of it.
Right, you're playing a dangerous game with that.
Yeah.
Because you can either just stack, you can either kind of keep making solid rows and eliminating rows as you go, or you can kind of build up this very giant precarious lump. And then you really need a long bar to come.
And they must be judged by, you know, not just what round you can get to, but how many Tetrises you get. Because this kid was going on. He just needed, like, one more Tetris. And you'll hear in the tape here, I'm going to play a little bit more of it. They keep on, I think it's in the tape, they say how long the long bar drought has been going on. I think at one point they say it's been 13 moves since a long bar. Oh, it's a 17-move drought. Take a listen to this.
Perfect. It's set up now. He's still
just
waiting. 13-piece drought. 17-piece drought.
End?
There's
this
the long bar.
The crowd is much bigger than I thought. It looks like it's in a mall or a mall-type area.
It was somewhere in Portland. I was in Portland yesterday. I had no idea this was going on.
Really? Was
ironically,
traffic bad
I was
because
at my
of it?
Sister Sarah's house.
Wow. She
the Tetris
have been,
Master.
She should have been at this mall. I wonder if she...
Yeah.
Would she be even... Well, she'd probably have to do a lot of training. She has other things going on in her life. But
yeah, I definitely think she's probably slipped. But I remember as a kid, she was like... She was savant level with it. It was quite something to watch. All right, now back to emails. Do you have any emails or emails you'd like to
Let me see here. Yeah, I
present.
Got some
and if not,
stuff.
That's fine too. I'm happy to
I'm
wrap
just gonna,
things
let's
up.
Set the record straight on a couple of quick things here. We were talking about pigs the other day, and you did say something quickly about how you know, we think of pigs as being dirty, but actually they're very clean. And we only think of them as dirty because of the conditions we keep them in. We got a note from a farmer, Bryce here, who just wants us to know, no, pigs are dirty. You know, they're smart and everything, but they're dirty as hell. He says, they are amazing, smart, and wonderful, but they are not pets. Even wild, quote unquote, wild pigs are not house pet clean. They love to wallow. They love to rut. They love food that is stinky. The more fermented, the better. As a gentleman farmer and the brother of someone who raises pigs on a regular basis, I can tell you that your ideas about pigs sound more fantasy than fact. Sorry, bro. I think it's just the dirt thing.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Isn't part of it that pigs don't sweat, so they have to wallow to try to like keep their core temp down?
That rings a bell. If you're wrong, we will be
What I like to do is when I'm presented with real information that contradicts my misinformation, I like to present more misinformation.
Right. That's how we keep
Have
the
I mentioned I'm
turning.
Trying to lie more?
Keep the wheels turning. What you said does ring a bell, though, that they do it for part of that for cooling reasons. We got a super long email from David who wanted to explain to us how microwaves work. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but you had mentioned we were joking around about how you had these complicated instructions how to cook your enchilada from Trader Joe's. You threw one line in there like you couldn't even remember the science behind microwaves. I found this interesting. I'm going to give you just the broad strokes here before it gets too crazy. But the simple answer is that microwaves work by heating the water molecules in your food. This is why wetter components, like the filling of a pie, will heat faster than drier ones.
I knew this, but I totally forgot it. But thanks for the reminder. Yeah, that is what happens, right? But then still, my question remains, and maybe it's in this very long email, what is the microwave? What I mean is not what the box is, what the electronics are, but what is the wave of micro that is being sent through the thing to heat the molecules up? Like, what is that? I don't understand what that is.
Let me explain. There's no time. Let me sum up. Is that even close to the quote from The Princess Bride? Is that even close to what he says?
Which part?
Oh, he says at one point, he says, let me explain.
Oh.
No time. Let me sum up. I think
Let me sum up.
Yeah.
I believe that.
Slightly more complicated answer is microwaves work by using, well, microwaves, which are just a type of electromagnetic radiation, like light waves or radio waves or X-rays or UV waves. What makes the microwaves in your microwave oven interesting is their wavelength, the distance between the peaks of each wave. That distance for a microwave is about 12 centimeters. The reason that it's interesting is it's just the right size to be absorbed by the water molecules. The energy from the microwave is transferred to the water molecule, making it more energetic, which is what we call heat. The heat from the water molecules then transfers to the surrounding substance, and your food gets hotter. So he goes on to explain how wattage impacts this and levels
do an experiment
and all that.
Now.
Yeah.
First of all, that was a very, very helpful. Who was that listener email?
This is David in Yokohama.
Thanks, David. That was really a useful explanation. Here's my question. What if you microwave a saltine cracker?
Because there's so little.
Yeah, it has like no moisture in it. Would it heat up?
I think there
Could
is
God
moisture.
Could God microwave a saltine cracker so dry it wouldn't heat up?
I think there is moisture, even though it's much, much less moisture than, let's say, a Hungry Man's stew. I think the answer to that is there's a little bit of moisture in almost anything. That's my guess. Well, maybe not, though, because if you put a paper towel, I always cover my food with paper towels so it doesn't splatter all over the place. I've never had a hot paper towel come out of the microwave. So maybe there is zero.
I'm going to be doing some microwave experimenting later.
Ooh.
That's for damn sure.
Yeah, no.
Thanks for the email,
good
David.
Things come of that. I have some other good emails here, but let's just keep them because we should get onto the sports, and I don't want to rush through these too much.
Okay, so that means we need to pick a show title, which, of course, I wrote down zero.
Me too.
Bad Cobro.
Say something good and no point, and we'll go with that. But don't make it
too
sporty.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that. How about a song to go out with?
How about I just sing Carefree Highway to the best of my memory? Barring that, let's see here. Do you have any thoughts on this while I click around?
Well, we talked about the lotto. We talked about money.
Wasn't there a band called the Saltines?
Possibly.
Sounds. I'm just making this up. It sounds like there would be a band called the Saltines that would be like kind of a kind of poppy punk, possibly with a female lead singer. But I'm not seeing anything, so I just made that up. There's a song called 16 Saltines by Jack White.
I think I know what that one sounds like.
Can you do it?
I'm just saying it sounds probably like a White Stripes song.
Oh, right. Right. Yes.
Sure, why not? You know what? I like it. I dig it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. So we'll go out with this. We will thank you for listening on this Monday, and we'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. If you are not a sport person, this is your signal to float on. For the rest of you, we'll be right back with the no-point conversion in just a moment. Thanks for listening to TBTL. Thanks for being a part of the show. Please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
You know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Wilson passes the ball to the end zone, touchdown. You know we're gonna get the crown in Super Bowl 24. Team, we get the ring, the bling. Listen to the crowd sing, Seahawks, Seahawks, Seahawks. We block that offense to say we'll lose is such an offense and nonsense. We got the best defense, being the other quarterback comes with the expense of the act of being sacked. I hope the Broncos have enough time to react to the level of game the Hawks are bringing. That evening, a Super Bowl Sunday, because they're going to go all the way for the win, starting when the game begins, all the way.
I wish I could somehow like time it so that Rudy's whining coincided with the music, because she was almost in time. What I realized is, and I've talked about this now, I think, a few times, she understands that when I say no mountain too tall,
right,
it's the end of the show, which is so insane. There's so many things she doesn't understand that are so obvious, but this one weird nuanced thing she gets now, and we're about a half hour from her mealtime. And so, of course, I said, no mountain too tall. She comes over here just like, all right, what's good? And then I'm like, what's good is we're about to talk about the Browns for 45 minutes.
Yeah, she should. I mean, but you always say, if you're not interested in sports, we'll see you later. Like, listen for that,
Rudy. If you're not interested in sports, your dinner is a good hour away.
I thought you were supposed to be smart, Rudy. Come on. It's not that difficult.
I told you, only smart about certain things and not other things. All right. Seahawks, obviously, were off this weekend. I do want to talk about them a little bit after we talk about the Browns. But let's talk about the Browns game. They played Tampa. It was a very up and down game because I'll mostly leave this to you, Andrew, because you watched it.
Did you listen or watch or anything? It sounds like you were traveling around Portland.
I was kind of bopping around. And so what I was doing though was checking it a lot on my phone. And I have to admit that when I checked it in the second quarter, I was like, ah, shit, they're getting blown out.
Oh, bad.
Like they did not get off to a hot start. And so then later when I saw that they lost 26-23, but I had no idea the high drama that had unfolded. First of all, I'm sorry for you. I'm sorry for your loss. Condolences.
And again, and we just
got a tough game.
Start off by saying they have played 7 games this year. Four of them have gone into overtime. And
it's got to be a record.
Not counting the tie, you had 2 that almost were a tie because the game was decided in the last couple of minutes of overtime.
So they've had 3 games that have gone down to like the last 2 or 3 minutes of any amount of football time that is allotted for a game.
Yes. Yeah, maybe even more than that if you're thinking about, well, I guess, yeah, I mean, and some of those.
The tie and the 2 almost ties.
Right, yeah. So, as Mina Kimes posted on Twitter, the Browns are so extra. So, yeah, they came out like just a bunch of turds in the first half. I don't think we've had a first quarter touchdown yet this season. Let me give you some broad strokes before we break down the game, because I think this is an interesting time for the Browns. Another very, very close game that was a loss. And the beginning of the season, even though we weren't winning, we were seeing a lot of progress over what we saw last year. We're seeing some exciting play. We have our new quarterback, Baker Mayfield, who came in and saved the day in week three and got us our first win in forever. Like, even though we weren't winning consistently, the fan base was pretty happy and excited about this new era of Cleveland Browns football. The last three games have been played pretty shoddily, at least at times. We won one of them against the Ravens because, you know, and that was a pretty crappy game. We won ugly, as we discussed on this show. Last week we got totally blown out by the Chargers, which I wasn't too upset about because I thought, I don't know, at least it wasn't a nail biter that killed me at the end. And I don't think this is an indicator of what the rest of the season is going to be like. I think it was a glitch and we got beat by a team that was better than us on that day. This game, and I'm not alone in this, really is the game that kind of got the fan base angry. Another really, really close game that is lost in overtime that at the end was very winnable. They came out of the gate playing like total crap. The first half, it was almost, I mean, just terrible. I think they went into the half 16-2. The only points scored by the Browns at that point were a safety, thanks to an amazing punt by our punter. But they couldn't get anything done on offense. Going into the half, there was a point where we were very much in field goal range. I think we were maybe at the 30-yard line, maybe even the 25. It was fourth down, and instead of taking the 3 points, they decided to give it to Baker Mayfield and let him run it. I'm trying to think if the play was designed that way or if he had the option to do it or just scrambled. But he does run the ball and almost gets a first down. A much-needed first down, and then he fumbles it right at the end. They punch it out. He wasn't protecting it well, and they punch it out of his arms, and it goes out before he gets the first down. His feet got the first down. The ball bounces back. So it's a blown opportunity to at least get some offensive points on the board. We would have gone in to the half with at least 5-16, but instead, you know, the coaching staff decided to go for it. Kind of a questionable move. I'm not totally against it, but it kind of sets the stage for what we're going to see when we come back into the second half of the game. The Browns offense adjusts some things. We get a couple of touchdowns, a couple of really cool touchdowns, frankly. We're seeing some actual connections now between Baker Mayfield and I want to say Tyrod Taylor with Jarvis Landry. Has been a huge problem.
It's contagious,
problem.
Bro.
It's contagious,
it's really,
bro.
Really contagious.
We haven't seen Landry used enough. He should be a hot shot receiver for us, but, you know, maybe blame it on the rookie quarterback. He's just not getting as many looks as he should. But in the second half of this game, the Browns look like a different team. We're getting stuff done. We're getting the ball to Jarvis Landry, and we could have won in overtime. You know, it's a pretty miraculous comeback. And then we go into overtime, and everything is – I wouldn't say everything is breaking our way. We have to punt it away. They have to punt it away. We get the ball back after a fumble in overtime. Wait. Luke, I think that's a lie. No, I don't think that. We got an interception. We got a pick. But we still didn't win because Jabril Peppers, our, you know, kick returner,
your guy
the
fumbled
ball.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
I was looking at the breakdown of this and I was like, okay, Jabril Peppers fumbles on he fumbled on like the 48 or something. And then I looked at what the offensive progress was for Tampa and I was like, they didn't go far enough to kick a field goal. How does this work? And it's because they kicked like a 59-yard field goal?
Yes, and this is the amazing thing. The kicker for the Buccaneers missed two kicks during the game. He missed an extra point kick, and he missed a 40-yard field goal. So he's shaken up. Maybe 2 minutes left on the clock in overtime. It's fourth down. You would think that their team would try to go for it at this point, but they decide to put their kicker, who's missed two easier kicks out there, for a 59-yard field goal. He gets it through. End of game. Like a 59-yard field goal.
They must have no friggin' faith in their offense, like at that point, or some weird misplaced faith in their kicker, because That's after that history. That's like madness to go for that length.
Well, it came after two big sacks, too. They were in much better field position, and then there were two huge sacks by the Browns that pushed them back, and then one play, I think, maybe that made up a little bit of ground. But, yeah, so if they're losing faith, that would explain it. They had gotten pushed back
twice. Their offense is not clicking at this moment, so they're just going to try and go for it. Wow.
But, yeah, so we lose in a way that does, again, feel like kind of a curse because – how does a broken kicker make a 59-yard field goal? But that shit happens. And, again, this was a game that was just, like, at the end, in the Browns' hands. It was the Browns to win, and they gave it away. I mean, there was some weird shit going on with the officiating. But, I mean, when you don't score any points in the first half, you can't talk about the officiating as a reason you lost this game. It was just really, really frustrating. And what's happening now, as I alluded to, the fan base is getting really angry. The coaches are getting angry. There was some news earlier this week that – guess we didn't talk about it on the show because it's not TBTL related, but we had three really good running backs, and they traded one of them away, Carlos Hyde. They traded him away for just like not very good terms, a fifth round draft pick in 2019. And there was scuttlebutt, apparently pretty accurate scuttlebutt, that was the general manager saying, "You're playing this guy too much. We want to see the other running back." So he traded it away. If that's true, like, that's already like showing a lot of mistrust, I guess, in your head coach. And then after this game, with tensions kind of high, you know, Hugh Jackson, the head coach, throws his offensive coordinator under the bus and says, you know, "I think I need to insert myself more," and implies that he's going to start making more like game time calls. He's going to start calling the game offensively, which is just terrible. He didn't have an offensive coordinator the past 2 years, and he won one game in two seasons. Right. He's a bad offensive call player, but he kind of walked that back in today's press conference. But if you do a search on Hugh Jackson right now, and I'm not saying it's right, everybody's angry and the blood is up, but there are national headlines like from Sports Illustrated saying, like, "Is Hugh Jackson on the way out? Is he the worst coach in football?" And so it really seems like, you know, things are getting a little bit ugly and tempers are flaring.
I mean, look, I don't want to be jumping on this guy when he's down, but, like, if you just take the emotion out of it, the dude is – how many wins do they have this season, two?
Two this season, none last, one the year before.
And one the year before. So he has four wins in over the course of what
No,
is
three
now,
wins, 2.5 years,
three,
right?
Three wins out of, like, 35 regular season games or something?
Yeah.
Because there's only been, like, well, how many games have there been this season?
Seven.
I mean, basically, he has had a shockingly low number of wins. And, like, you can say all you – like, the thing is, this team is stacked with talent, or at least at certain positions, you know? So don't you feel like – do you feel like the criticism of him is fair at this point?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was a big defender of him the past couple of years. What I keep on seeing as a Browns fan is the fan base gets irritated, the ownership gets irritated, and they keep on cycling through coaches. And I don't think that that is a good way to win. I think you need to trust somebody, give them a few years, and see what happens. And when there was talk of firing him last year, I was very much against it. Maybe it's just because I no longer like him personally after actually seeing what – his leadership style and Hard Knocks, that might have really changed for me, and that's not really fair. Watching, you know, four episodes of a documentary does not tell you everything about a coach. But I've personally lost faith in him, like, especially if he's going to be, like, kind of starting to throw people under the bus. Like, Todd Haley, I have more faith in his offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, who's making some boneheaded calls, but still, he's also got a bunch of rookies he's working with. Hugh Jackson has shown us nothing so far. My only concern is, if you get rid of Hugh Jackson right now, you're really kind of throwing it all away. Because who do you bring in? You know, there aren't other coaches. We're not at that part of the season yet where other coaches are being fired. And so you can bring in somebody who maybe will do better with a different, you know, change of scenery or something. Like, I guess you maybe make your offensive coordinator your interim head coach, but you're probably not going to get a lot of wins that way. So I hate Hugh Jackson right now, but I also don't know what the options are.
Well, I mean, if you agree that they're not going to the playoffs this year, the specific number of wins they get is kind of immaterial. I would point to a team like the LA Rams, who were just very mediocre under Jeff Fisher. And then you put Sean McVay in there and you're just like, with a lot of the same components. And Jared Goff was not good under Jeff Fisher. Granted, he was a rookie. But I used to not – for the longest time, I really pushed back on the idea of, like, thinking a coach could change a team in the same way that I think a quarterback can't change a team, because I think really it's mostly about all the parts that the quarterback's working with and if you can protect the quarterback so then they can be effective. And I used to think that that was the same thing with coaching, and maybe most of the time it's just kind of like, well, if the coach has good players, the team will be good. Mm-hmm. If the coach has bad players, the team will be bad. I will say the LA Rams really, really kind of contradicted that notion, because that team is much better because their coach is Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel like if you are the Browns and you want to hire someone else, I don't know. To me, it would be like you start now, because, again, you're not going to go to the playoffs under Hugh Jackson, and you probably won't go to the playoffs under his replacement. But if that person needs more time, like get more games under their belt, like basically if you want to change the culture of the team and start winning, or at least start somehow break – what I feel like the problem right now is – and this is from far away. You watch these games carefully, so does DFTB. You know more about it than I do. But I do think that there is a sort of – I thought they'd broken this, but I think there's a psychological component to these close games. I think when you win some of them, you start to feel like you can win them, and then you do win them. And when you kind of feel like you're waiting for the other cleat to drop,
mm-hmm.
that has its own effect. It's been worse in other seasons. I mean, there have been those two seasons where literally everything that can go wrong goes wrong for the Browns. But I still feel like there is just – I don't think that he is a good – like, I don't love Pete Carroll all the time, and I think a lot of his habits are annoying, and I don't think – whatever. But I do like the feeling that if it's a close game for the Seahawks, I feel like if they look to the sideline, they get more confidence from looking at Pete Carroll.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Whether,
especially the younger players.
Right. So I kind of feel like to some degree, I mean, there's schemes and there's all the like X's and O's that coaches draw up. But then there's also just the kind of like being like the, I don't want to call it the emotional center of the team, but like there's some intangible thing that I don't feel like Hugh Jackson really can project to this team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of just confidence, I guess, really is what I'm talking about. And I just feel like with the team he has, he should have been able to win more of these games than he has.
Yes.
And to me, it's like in years past when they got rid of all the good players, it's like, okay, fine. He doesn't have a lot of tools. Although even other teams that don't have good players manage to win more than one game out of two seasons. Like there are shitty teams in the NFL that win five games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Like to me, I just feel like they gave him a lot. Or he had a really skilled group to, or at least he had a more promising group to work with this year, and the results have not been drastically better. And I think that ultimately has to kind of go back to Hugh Jackson.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only thing about switching midstreams now is if you have who's the Rams coach that you were just citing, the new guy,
Sean McVay.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a Sean McVay in the wings or somebody that you have confidence in, but chances are what would happen, especially we're not even to our bye week yet. If you swap him out now, you're only putting somebody in there who's probably going to be an interim coach until they can get it figured out in the offseason. So you're not really building. It's not like you're starting to build for the future earlier. You're just causing chaos with a temporary plan. Listen, if Hugh Jackson, by the way, I'm just looking at his stats now. His birthday is October 22nd. Happy birthday, Hugh. For the first time since you've been the Browns coach, like national headlines are questioning whether or not you should be a coach anymore. Hope you're having a great day. I don't know. I don't know exactly what the options are. One other thing that I keep on hearing people say on the radio is when you lose a bunch of very close games, and every single loss has been very close. Every loss has been within 3 points, I want to say. Could be wrong about that. That
very close.
That you're looking at. That is a reflection of coaching. That is a reflection of, you know, decision making at critical moments during the game. Like, again,
right.
You know, Baker Mayfield would have gotten a first down on that fourth down play if he hadn't fumbled the ball. That's not necessarily his fault, but we lost in overtime. You know, maybe we should have taken the 3 points there. I would have taken the 3 points there. Also, I understand you take 3 points in the first half of the game, that could affect how the other team plays their game later on. So who knows how that butterfly flaps its wings. But there were other things that happened, too. You know, there was another time we were on the goal line because of a pass interference call. We couldn't get the ball in, and we used all four downs. And, you know, at one point we give it to Chubb. who's like our running back, our young running back that we're now leaning on more because we got rid of Carlos Hyde, and Chubb couldn't do it. So on fourth down, they try a quarterback sneak with our tiny little quarterback who's probably never done a quarterback. I think he's done one more as a Brown, and in college he didn't do those. And so really you're calling a quarterback sneak there. I don't know if that's Hugh Jackson. I don't know if that's Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, who's calling that stuff. But, you know, if you didn't have this internal – whatever's going on internally, and you have Carlos Hyde, I happen to think Carlos Hyde gets that in. Carlos Hyde was our top scorer, in, you know, until we got rid of him for a fifth-round pick earlier this week.
That makes me wonder if Carlos Hyde wasn't, like asking for a trade. Because that's just, like, you're not getting very much for Carlos Hyde. Also, this will feel good. I say that sarcastically, so prepare yourself. Julian Edelman got on Twitter and deeply thanked the Browns for sending Josh Gordon over there, who had 100 yards yesterday receiving.
Looking at – if you type in Carlos Hyde, I mean, it just seemed like, you know, did John Dorsey trade Carlos Hyde to force the coaches to play Nick Chubb? I mean, it seems like – I don't know. I haven't heard anything about it being Hyde wanting to get out of there. Hyde was – you know, Hyde was treated well on this team. He was scoring a lot of – he was getting a lot of touches and scoring a lot of points.
He wasn't running for a lot of yards, but he was scoring a lot of touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm just surprised that the market value of that is just a fifth rounder.
I know.
I feel like I would have thought the market value of Josh Gordon would be higher, despite his personal problems, and I would have thought the market value of Carlos Hyde would have been higher. So that's why I assumed, at least in the case, I mean, with Josh Gordon, you know, it's that he's had substance abuse issues, and the Browns were just like, you know, at some point we got to draw the line. And of course, what I worried would happen is happening, which is, and as you mentioned, also would probably happen. He's now been surrounded by this extremely comprehensive Patriot offense. It's very complicated. Mm-hmm. He's playing with all these elite players. His mind is not on boozing. It's probably on catching passes. And he's finally going to turn into the person he could have been all along when he was at the Browns.
Yeah.
And, you know, which for Josh Gordon as a human, I'm happy for.
Yeah, me too.
As a person who just deeply hates the success of the Patriots, it makes me sad.
Yeah, absolutely. And as somebody who roots for the Browns and sees all this talent go elsewhere and then be successful elsewhere, Carl Nassib, who is a defensive lineman, a former defensive lineman, we had him at the beginning of the year, or at least through training camp. We trade him away to the Buccaneers, and he had two sacks yesterday. By the way, that's another thing. Baker Mayfield has been sacked. Well, I don't know his full numbers, but he was sacked 5 times yesterday. He was sacked a huge number the week before. I don't have it in front of me. I want to say 5 again. I don't know if that is rookie quarterback stuff, not getting rid of the ball, not throwing it away, not doing what he needs to do. But I would also say we're not doing enough to protect him. And, you know, we don't have Joe Thomas at left tackle anymore. And just to see this guy, Nassib, who we got rid of, just come in and, you know, get 2 of the 5 sacks really sucked. So I don't know, man. My takeaways, I realize I've been talking a mile a minute here.
Well, that's all right. This is all about Cleveland today.
I'm really frustrated. You know, we're playing the Steelers next week. Yesterday, when Hugh Jackson was implying that he was going to start doing more play calling, you're just like, are you kidding me? Your offensive coordinator played – he was the offensive coordinator for the Steelers last year. Let him call the plays against the Steelers this week, okay, Hugh? And again, Hugh has kind of – walk that back and claims that he didn't say that yesterday in today's press conference. But, you know, something weird is definitely going on in the locker room and in the front office and the communication and everything. But hopefully, you know, we got our first non-loss against the Steelers earlier this year when we tied them. But the Steelers weren't as good at the beginning of the year, and they have definitely heated up. I am very nervous about next week, but we'll see what we see.
Do you feel like the overall direction this team is going is up, down, or just kind of flat?
I feel like it's going down, and this is me kind of responding on an emotional level, and so I hope that my concern is we're starting to see dysfunction, and I don't like dysfunction. I like the head of steam that they had. I like the feeling around, and who knows what's going on in the locker room, but I find it hard to believe that these guys aren't starting to feel bad, you know, have negative feelings. I mean, they're really working, man. I mean, they've played an extra game of football.
Right.
They've played
That's
4
nuts.
Extra quarters than other teams in the league have played.
Jeez,
so,
I never thought of that.
I mean, that's
harsh.
Hard on them.
Like an extra game of tackle football is just like that breaks you as a player.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so anyway, so, you know, I hope they stick with it. You know, Jarvis Landry apparently was putting on his – he had amazing goddamn catch, right almost at the goal line. He falls as he catches it, but there's nobody there to touch him, so he's not officially down, and he just does this, just like, again, veteran move stretch.
It's
to
contagious,
get it.
Bro. Like, it's really f***ing contagious.
Oh, thanks for
it's contagious.
It. As long as you don't beep us when we say that all the time. Anyway, apparently he's like, people were reporting he's putting on his shirt in the locker room and he's not using one of his arms. But he says he's fine and, you know, whatever, he'll be fine by Sunday. We'll see. But, I mean, he's a real fighter. But, you know, you're playing that contagious tape. That came from him. Speech that
dressing
he gave the
down
players
the
saying,
rest of the
like,
receivers.
You work through it. You work through it. You don't like take small little injuries and sideline yourself. So that's his work ethic. But I hope that the newer players don't get discouraged too, because it just feels like, I don't know, it just feels like the mood is changing.
Yeah, I thought they'd be doing a little better than they are now. But I mean, it's a weird game because if ball bounces a couple different ways, they could be like, because they're 2-3-1 now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they could be 4-2.
Yeah, they could. They had games that they should have won.
So that's, you know.
Can I just say,
who knows? I mean,
can I just say one thing about the officiating? And you know, listen, like, teams are going to get some calls, or not going to get all calls. The Browns have been treated pretty shittily, I would say, by some pretty bad officiating this season. But maybe every single team can say that. But here's one that is really galling and is kind of a headline coming out of this game. At one point, Baker Mayfield, doesn't have an open receiver. He scrambles a little bit. He sees an opening, and he does this really fantastic run. Like, fantastic. I want to say more than 20 yards. And then he goes to slide. And then as he's sliding, you know, to go down, a Buccaneer, I don't know his name, a defender, comes in and just smashes him helmet to helmet. Just a helmet to helmet. I mean, look it up. Like, just a helmet to helmet smash. Now, we are playing in a league where when the quarterback is acting like the quarterback back in the pocket, if you so much as sneeze in his direction, you're going to get a roughing the passer, penalty.
Which, ironically, have been levied against Browns players at times. I think every team has that moment where their guy sacked someone, and then there was a 15-yard penalty for roughing the passer, and you're like, really?
Right, exactly. But it's something that, I mean, that is a shitty, whatever. They're trying to protect people's noggins, like, whatever. But it's something that every team is complaining
about.
They're
trying to protect their bottom line, honestly.
Right.
They're not worried about quarterbacks getting concussed. They're worried about Aaron Rodgers getting his clavicle broken again, and overall the advertising and the interest in the NFL and the advertising going down. That's the one thing I'll say. On the subject of keeping quarterbacks safe, that is not so much about CTE in my mind. That's about the NFL trying to protect its investment,
but
for
in,
the record.
In this particular case, though, so anyway, he's not in the pocket. He's out there running, and the rules are different when you're out there running. But he's running. He goes to take a knee. He gets just clobbered in a helmet-to-helmet. As a matter of fact, he stands up and he throws the ball. This is Baker Mayfield. He throws the ball at the defender and kind of gets in his face a little bit. I didn't see the helmet-to-helmet. A flag is thrown. Oh, shit. I think that he's going to be called for, like, taunting. No, the flag was thrown, apparently, because one of the refs saw this helmet-to-helmet, and it looked nasty. Then they review it, they pick up the flag, and they say, no penalty, he was acting as a running back, so therefore it's not rough, you know, it's not roughing. Or what would be the other term? Roughness.
Targeting.
Targeting or
illegal roughness.
Yeah, whatever. But the thing is, yes, He doesn't have the same protections as a quarterback in that case, but you still can't do a helmet-to-helmet. Like, even if he was a running back or a receiver, you're not allowed to headhunt like that. Like, this guy just, like, smashed into – I am surprised. Look it up. Like, I am surprised he is not concussed.
I'm watching it right now. It's
nasty, right? Tell me if I'm exaggerating
that. I'm watching it. Ooh. Yeah, but, I mean, not to be annoying, but I can also see the argument that – the defender who's tackling Baker Mayfield from the side as Baker Mayfield is going down. I mean, I don't know. If I'm a Browns fan, true to the blue, which would be weird because that's the Mariners slogan. Mariners slogan. If I'm a Browns fan watching this, it's a no-brainer, as in Baker Mayfield will have no brain in his head.
Exactly, right.
Like, it couldn't be more helmet-to-helmet. I guess the most generous interpretation possible is that this guy did not know that Baker Mayfield was – about to duck down the way he did. So the guy went from tackling Baker Mayfield, let's say midriff, to all of a sudden he's hitting him in the head. I mean, I'm confused by the whole helmet-to-helmet thing anyway. What I knew was you're not supposed to spear. That is when you would lead with the crown of your helmet. That makes sense. And you shouldn't be able to – you should not be allowed to use your helmet as a weapon. And you should not be able to, rough people up or target people. But I find helmet-to-helmet to be a very weird call anyway, because I think you can almost always argue that the person wasn't – the person didn't know they were going to hit the other person in the helmet with their head. Like, I almost kind of think that helmet-to-helmet shouldn't be a call unless it's something where it can be demonstrated the person was running down the field using their head intentionally to hit the other person's helmet. Like, I could see a very forgiving argument to this Tampa defender is that he just didn't realize where Baker Mayfield's head was going to be when he went for it. That being said, leading with the helmet, I think, is also a penalty, and he led with the helmet here. So I'm back to your side of it. There should have been some sort of penalty here.
And if nothing else, if you want to actually kind of talk about the rules, and you're right, like it does, you get into, we're watching this violent game, they're trying to keep players safer, whether it's for the bottom line or lawsuits or whatever they are. That is clearly why they're instituting these rules. We've seen how these things are called in every other game. Like, even if you have an argument about the overall rule, like you were just saying, you've watched six or seven more, because you've been watching two on Sundays too. You've watched, 10 or so football games this year, and you know that in every other case, especially when you throw the flag was already thrown, and then they decide to erase it. Like,
that's nuts.
Never goes that way, especially, and again, I know he's acting as a running back here, but he is a quarterback. And the only thing we've heard this year is protect the quarterback. What kind of world are we living in where, given everything we know from watching football this year, that is called and then erased?
How do you pick the flag up on that?
How do you pick the flag up on that thing? I mean, it is so fucking Agreed. Violent.
I agree. Like, I was forgetting the fact that the flag had already been thrown. That's madness. Like, if you've thrown the flag because of what you saw and then you watched, there's nothing in there that would make me think it was less helmet-to-helmety.
Right.
You know? There's certainly no evidence, or there's not, like, what do they call it, like, incontrovertible or whatever. There's nothing in there that makes me think less that it was helmet to helmet.
Yeah.
From the initial reading of it or watching of it.
The only thing I can maybe think is that the person, maybe the ref who threw that flag, actually didn't see the helmet to helmet, had a different angle on it, and actually did throw it because of Baker Mayfield getting in the other guy's face and thought it was taunting. And then maybe they got together in their little huddle and the guy said, well, let's not call taunting because he brained him on that. Maybe that was actually the penalty that they were erasing, but then didn't present it that way. Because I know when the ref got up and turned on his microphone, he said, the quarterback was acting like a runner, so therefore there's no penalty. But anyway, that was
That makes no sense, because whether or not you're sliding, like you said, you can't be helmeted to helmeted.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if he's a running back or quarterback. If you hit someone with your helmet in their helmet, under the current rules, it's illegal. So they're definitely missing the point, it would seem, on that one part.
Yeah.
So,
but again, and I'm not saying that, like, Browns win game with that call. I mean, the Browns win the game if they score some points in the first half, right? Like, you can't blame that, but it just does seem like these things stack up, and it's just so frustrating.
Seahawks are going to be playing the Lions next week. They currently sit at 3-3. It's important to remember they started 0-2, and they barely lost to the Rams, a game we experienced in the SeaTac Airport. I'm more positive about this team at the bye than I thought I was going to be, feeling more positive. Just because I feel like we have been, with the exception of that Chicago game that was putrid, I think that we scored some points on the road against the Broncos. All the Broncos are actually not as good as I thought they were. We looked silly against the Bears. We won against the Cowboys. We beat the Cardinals, and then we lost to the Rams, who are like 7-0 and a friggin' juggernaut. I don't know. So all in all, I think that we're playing better than I expected us to. I kind of look at the rest of the season. 10 games left. So we got 2 wins. We need to win 8 out of 10 to get to 10 wins. That seems like a lot from this team, to win 80% of your games. Mm-hmm. Considering the teams are going up against, including the Rams one more time. I don't know. John Clayton, who I don't usually listen to that much, I think was saying that 9 wins should be enough to get them into the playoffs if they have some tiebreakers. Who knows? I'm looking at the rest of the schedule here. Lions, that's a winnable game. Chargers, that's a winnable game. Rams, probably not. Packers, tough. Panthers, I don't know, that's a coin toss to me. Niners, that should be a win. Vikings, that's a tough game. Depends on if they start the Stewbot or not. Niners, Chiefs are very tough now. So if you go Chiefs, Vikings, Packers, Rams, those are four really challenging games. I think it'd be optimistic to say that we win three out of the four. I think if we're lucky, we split those games. And then we have to win all of the gimmies the rest of the season.
I don't
we have
know
to beat all the
Chargers are a gimme either. I mean, listen, I know they clobbered
they're
the
like
Browns.
4-2.
But they're 5-2. One of those is the Browns, so that was not a good showing. But they also clobbered the Browns, a team that at least was close.
I'm used to just dismissing the Chargers by this point in the season. But you're right. They have a decent record. So, I mean, we have some tough games coming up. And I have to admit, I found a certain place of serenity with this, which is like, it's always fun when your team makes the playoffs. But, like, I don't think the Seahawks are a team that can win the Super Bowl this year. So, It's like, if your team can't win the Super Bowl, I don't know. I feel like I'm in a zen place where I'm really just looking for – I'm looking for the Seahawks to play better each week. I'm looking for these younger players to continue to improve. I'm looking for, you know – Trey Flowers, who's been playing pretty well, to get better. I'm looking for Shaquem Griffin to figure out where he fits in, because he's sort of been up and down this year. I'm looking for, like, a lot of these younger players to step up. Yeah, well, the running backs have been pretty good. What's weird about it is Rashad Penny is not getting many opportunities, but that's actually a good thing in my mind, because it's because Mike Davis and Chris Carson are actually running effectively.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a good problem to have as far as I'm concerned. I think Rashad Penny has looked pretty decent when he gets a chance. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know if we're going to get to 8 wins or 10 wins or 9 wins, and I don't know if we'll make the playoffs or not. I kind of think if we make the playoffs, it'll just buy us one extra week of fun, and that is a really fun week.
Yeah, it is.
When the regular season ends, just being amped all week about the game. But
and miracles
to me, it's
happen.
More like,
you know, don't forget about, you know, the New Orleans Beastquake game. I mean, that was we didn't make it to the Super Bowl that year, but my God, that was magical.
And the year that the Seahawks lost to the Steelers in the Super Bowl, the game in Detroit, the Steelers had to win, like, the last four games to even get the wild card. I mean, they were shite going into the playoffs. And they caught fire. Now, it was the early days of Roethlisberger. They had a different team. But, like, I think that was arguably, like, the worst NFL team by record. The worst NFL team going further than you would have ever expected, then playing a very scared Seahawks team in the Super Bowl and winning by virtue of that. But so, yeah, you're right. There's always a chance. There's always a chance. But I am all in all feeling more optimistic about this team just in terms of, like, the 3-year window.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than I was at the beginning of the season. I think some of these folks that we brought in, these younger players, are really actually looking kind of like how we hoped they would. Also, did you see that Michael Kendricks has a court hearing this week to figure out, I guess, like, if he can be out on bail or something?
Oh, maybe. What if we have a player on bail playing for the team?
We're the new Death Row Records.
Yeah.
Out on bail. I'm sorry. This is just people wearing Seahawks colors, and then I immediately become a defender of them. But, dude, it's obviously not good that Michael Kendricks insider traded. His apology, when he was a Brown still, I read it as one of the most genuine apologies I've ever read from a famous person who did something bad. He was genuinely apologetic. He's paid the money back. I guess he's going to have to go to jail, but Jesus Christ, with all the stuff that goes down in our world and with all the stuff that happens in the NFL, stock tip, like, it's just so, it feels like such an... I have no problem with him being on the Seahawks, and I will root for his team of lawyers to forestall the government's justice for as long as possible.
I'm with you on that. His crimes do not bother me. I mean, there are people out there on the field. I feel worse rooting for Frank Clark than him, certainly. And Frank Clark never did time. So, like, I also have a little piece of I have a PSA for people. When a running back is traded from the Browns to Jacksonville 2 days before Sunday game day, that running back is not going to play. I did not know that, and I played Carlos Hyde on my fantasy team this week. I was like, oh, you know what? The Jaguars have their new running back in Carlos Hyde. He was hot with the Browns. They're going to want to play with their new toy. But no, Turns out football men need at least a little bit of time to probably learn their new team and learn the new offense. And I did something super embarrassing in my fantasy, which is I played a player who is out.
Well, I'm starting a couple people who are on buys because I can't flipping get into the software again. I don't know what is up with... Why does Yahoo exist, honestly? That is antiquated, outdated BS. Because I get my team all set up, I'm all excited, and then for no reason that I can figure out, about every month, I get my email from the We Are 10 Fantasy League. I click on it, and when I'm getting into Game of Throws, it starts going, please log in with this. Like, it needs me to re-log in, and it never knows what I'm trying to do. And I have like 9 million Yahoo accounts, and it's none of them, and I have to start a new password. And then when I start a new password, do you have this trouble with Yahoo?
I do not. And I got to be honest with you, I haven't heard anybody else having it either. I don't know. I can't tell what your problem is. But now I don't know if they force this on me. I do have like second source verification of my Yahoo. So when I sign in with my password, they then also send me a code to my phone that I got to type in. So it's a little bit like our work security in that way. But
maybe
I think
that's part of it. Is I just never want to do that.
I don't know. But
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what your problem is. I actually find – I think they switched to the Yahoo Fantasy because the other one, I think the one that the NFL runs, I found to be – once you're in, like user interface is so great on Yahoo, like moving players around.
I got no problem with it once you're in there, but I just feel like, I don't know, doesn't matter. But just tell Genevieve, congratulations.
Her prediction.
You called it. Luke's now Luke's once again piloting a ghost frigate.
Right. Which, by the way, I felt bad. I didn't even realize I was stealing your term. Somebody who writes for some podcast online publication interviewed me for the Spotless podcast that I do with Hannah. They publish on Medium, so I don't want to make it sound like I was in the New York Times, but I like being interviewed.
Medium's a slick website.
But anyway, the piece is out, and the story was about Podfade, looking at the number of podcasts that are on Apple iTunes or in Apple Podcasts, but like something like 80-90% of them haven't published in three years.
That's a very interesting idea for an article,
actually. Yeah, and like talking about like, you know, why podcasts don't survive. And the numbers are staggering as far as the number of podcasts that are actually in the directory, but whether or not they've published in the past year and then whether or not they've published in the past 3 months. I mean, everybody starts them and nobody continues them. And so I was kind of talking about that and saying, you know, as somebody who does it for a living and as somebody who just kind of basically sees this stuff as a point of pride, I would be embarrassed, you know, to like start a podcast and then stop it. Like, I don't want to be. And at one point I was reading the article and I referred to them as ghost ships. And I was like, that's not me talking. That's Luke. That's your old ghost. That's your old ghost.
I didn't invent
frigate.
That either, though.
Yeah.
I didn't invent it either, though. So don't worry about that.
It was that, though, and then there was something I stole, another quote from me in there, and I was like, oh, I think I heard Aaron
Mason
say that.
You said you were a teen father?
And then I also said, you might like my show LiveWire, check it out. So I gave you a free plug.
Nice. All right, well, here we are at the end of this no-point conversion. Next week is another CRE. Are both teams playing at the same time?
Yeah, and I'm going to be in Cleveland.
Week.
So, yeah, I mean, I actually, last week was awesome for me. My whole media blackout thing on Sunday was great. I woke up, streamed the Browns, turned off my phone, taped the Seahawks, and then watched the Seahawks and just had a whole day of afternoon football. But I'm going to be in Cleveland at my parents' house on Sunday, so I will make it a priority to watch the Browns game with them. But I don't think that I'll be able to like kind of really pay much attention to the Seahawks. Maybe I might pop it open on a screen to keep an eye on it, but I won't have the full immersion. So that's kind of a bummer.
I'll be interested to hear the full report when you get back, because I don't want to put anyone on blast, but it sounds like Last time you watched the Browns there, you were very excited about the whole thing, but then you also had to, like, behave more like, let's say, a normal person.
Well, I would, I guess. I was, yeah, I had told my folks.
Sorry,
like, this
I don't
is
mean,
my,
to, I'm
my,
not trying to set
no,
you
no,
up.
No, 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 it's okay. My one priority was I can't wait to watch the Browns game. And also I was really looking forward to it. My dad likes the Browns. I was really looking forward to watching it together. And my stepmom was going to make a bunch of, like, football food and stuff. And then we watched the game, and then about a quarter into the game, my stepmom said, "Okay, the food's ready. Come on upstairs." It was like, and it was like bratwurst and stuff. And I was like, "What do you mean? I thought we were watching the game." They're like, "Yeah, just pause the game. We're going to eat our football food upstairs at the kitchen table, and then we can go back to the game when we're done eating. We don't like to take food into the living room." And so I sat there.
Well,
I became,
see, now
like,
we're getting more of the story.
I became like a 10-year-old again. I just sat there petulantly. I'm just like, the game is going on. I'm in Cleveland. The game is live. I now can't look at my phone because people will be texting me if the Browns do anything. Like, the TV is right downstairs. I'm not hungry. I don't want to be sitting at this table. Just like, knowing that I'm now not watching. I was so excited to watch a Cleveland Browns game in Cleveland. It was funny.
But I mean, when I said a normal person, what I mean is, you could then go back and watch the game. You weren't going to miss the game. You're just not going to be able to watch it in exactly the time stream you wanted. But now this is another dazzling deet of how this came about. You also grew up in a family where you did not do takeout food in the car. So it actually doesn't shock me to hear that you were probably bringing the brats into, like, the other parts of the house was maybe not the preferred way to eat them. And you got to watch the game, and it turned out okay, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Browns lost, and
we know that much.
We know that the Browns lost, and it didn't really matter. But, yeah, this year I will say I'm fine not having football food. Let's just watch the game. But
yeah. Well, it'll be fun for you to watch it in Cleveland. I'm curious to hear the whole experience.
Yeah. Let's do our thing here. So you play Romney, right? And then I play Bad Finger here.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, you tell me when you're ready.
We still don't have a show title, though, but we'll figure that out later.
Let's see. God, I thought I was going to say some funny stuff during the no point. I really
know.
Didn't.
No, nobody said anything good. We could just keep going. We're at 2 hours now. If we do another hour of show, I'm sure we can come up with something. It's 5 o'clock
I'll think of
West
something.
Coast time, by the way. It's 8 o'clock East Coast time right now. We haven't even finished recording.
That's on me, Mubby. No, let's do this. I'll think of some show titles. You think of? I'll send you a few ideas.
Okay,
I really will.
All right, no problem.
All right, here comes Mitt Romney, in 3, 2, and 1.
I mean, I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
Power out.